Hi, everybody. Welcome. This is Della from the Beauty of Play, and we are going to get started here. I'm going to share my screen. And start the presentation. So today I'm talking about preparing for high school, and this kind of covers a little bit of our high school experience and our little bit of the middle school experience. It's more of what to expect, what to look for as you go along. So the first one is don't panic. I don't know about you, but there were some major shifts in our homeschooling journey when we went from elementary school to middle school, and then again in middle school before high school, where I was like, oh, we've really got to up our game. Like, we're moving into middle school or we're moving into high school. And I start to panic and I start to feel like we should do more academia stuff and that our homeschooling should look more like school. And then what usually happens is I call a friend of mine who also homeschools, who's from Finland. And she calms me down. She helps me to remember why we homeschool. She helps me to remember that we don't have to go on somebody else's timeline and so forth. But there are some hoops that do have to be gone through for certain things. And there, I guess it is helpful to know what's ahead and what you're looking for, so that you mostly leave your options open. The whole idea in high school is to make sure that you check off all the boxes that you need to, and those don't have to be a direct checked off in the same way that they are in school, but so that you leave your options open. So you are able to cater your homeschooling to your child in the same way that you have done in previous years. That doesn't stop. There is a little more, I don't know if finagling is the right word. There's a little more adjustment, manipulation done to make sure that, you are doing English, you are getting math done. But again, this is it. You don't have to go the same speed. In fact, we didn't. We started some high school classes, I think Latin and American history in eighth grade. And then also, he had a full additional semester before graduating and going on to college. So you definitely don't have to go in someone else's timeline. You can cater it to the child. There was lots of classes that had to do with his passion in our high school years, and there was classes that were self-study, just completely self-directed, because he was motivated in a certain area to learn, and so those were completely self-study. And then in the beginning, when that happened, for some of his courses, I counted them after. You spent a great deal of time at this. You learned quite a bit. I'm counting that as a class afterwards. For some of them, we could foresee that coming. There was a particular test, a certification that he wanted, and that required quite a bit of study. And so we laid out a plan for that. I purchased the books that he needed. We went through the book and looked, and then he used some of his school time during the day to do that self-study. But other than helping him think of those things through and to plan for them, I wasn't a part of any of that. And neither was any particular instructor. It was a self-study. So you're still able to cater to your child's passions, to your child's education and their needs. That doesn't change. It doesn't have to change just because you're moving into middle school or high school. Like I said before, it really helped me to remember why we homeschool. Like, why did I start this journey in the first place? And a lot of it was time, freedom, being able to follow our passions, not going by somebody else's standards or someone else's schedule. And I don't think standards are bad in particular, but there are different ways to achieve standards. And, you know, there are different, slightly different values and how those are taught. And so remembering your why helps you to get through these years and stay on focus for what you want in your homeschooling, because it's really easy to look out and think, I need to be doing that, or I need, you know, like look at school children or public school children or public school and think, I need to be doing that. And yeah, there is a lot for us to gain from looking in that direction. I mean, there's a lot to gain, but also we can accomplish the same things without doing the exact same things, or doing it in a different way, one that's slower, that's more child-centered. Remember why we started homeschooling to begin with. Okay, the other thing that I just want to for us to think about is that homeschooling allows for unconventional sources, classes, experiences than those of children in public school. And there are advantages and disadvantages of both ways. I am not a Debbie Downer on public schools. I think they're really important. I think there's a lot of advantages to going to school. But I also think, like everything, that there are advantages and disadvantages of homeschooling. And one of the major advantages of homeschooling is that you can look for unconventional sources in your school. Like, we have a friend down the road that owns a nursery. We can go there and they can spend time with my daughter talking about plants. If your child loves animals, they can volunteer at the vet's office or the animal shelter or the wild rescue center. Like, there's just so many different opportunities. If a child really excels in an area in high school, then you can look at sitting in a college professor's course. And there are advantages and disadvantages of that, which I'll talk about when we hit dual enrollment, but just look for different ways. There's tons of online classes. There's just unconventional methods of high schooling in addition to the curriculum that you can purchase. And a lot of that is free online. Oh, and I talked about that, being able to sit in college courses, being able to do self-study, and then various online courses. In Florida, you can do all of school virtually through the Florida Virtual School. They offer that free to Florida. I think you can pay for it in other states, and I'm not sure what other states do, but there's also open source college courses from MIT. I think Stanford has some that you can sign up and take college courses online. There's, you don't get college credit for that, and we'll talk a little bit later about that, but they will, I mean, you do get to learn, to experience, particularly if your child excels in something. And then they're also outsourced in other areas. Brave Rider does online classes, and OutSchool offers online classes from different teachers. And there's all kinds of different online courses available for high school. So the biggest thing I think about in high school in particular is keeping your options open, because really when you hit high school at 14, what 14-year-old knows what they want to pursue for the rest of their life? Like, what very few that I know have the drive and direction to accomplish or seek out a path that's going to give them what they want. Even with my son, who was very directed in his passion, it shifted slightly. And I'll talk about some of that as we go along. So some of the things that are helpful in keeping our options open are knowing the requirements for those options. For instance, this is a time of transition between at middle school where lots of kids really start to take an interest or think about going to high school, transitioning back into school. So when you're making that decision of whether to high school, to send your child to high school or to homeschool high school at home, there are a couple different things that you need to think about there. You definitely want to be having a conversation with your high school because there are certain expectations. And unlike other years where, you know, you can say no decision is permanent and still the decision isn't permanent, but there are ramifications or consequences sometimes for changing the decisions at this point. So one of, in our local area, one of the challenges that we have is that if you decide someone later than your freshman year that you want to switch to high school, they don't really accept homeschooling credits for high school education. And in that circumstance, you basically have to start over, right? If, unless they'll accept some of the online courses with transcripts and so forth, especially FLVS. But as far as homeschooling courses, they don't, those credits don't transfer to high school. It's not like from one high school to another. They don't accept those. So essentially, if a child decides their sophomore year that they want to enter high school here, then they're basically starting out as a freshman, which again is not a bad thing. You know, it's just important that you know what the situations are and what the consequences, I guess, to the decisions. I don't know, consequences seems like a negative word here, but just so you know how the system works, so you have a better understanding of what the, what your choices are and the decisions that you can make around them. So definitely be talking to your high school and find out that information before you start, particularly if your child is showing any interest in going back to public school at this age. That's something that you want to know before you get started homeschooling high school. So keep that in mind. The other thing that I think is important is to research and know the requirements for graduation for your state. And like homeschooling with all kinds of states, it is very different. In Florida, it just requires a parent signing off saying they've completed their home education. But in other states, there are graduation requirements that have to be fulfilled. So you definitely want to be talking to the Department of Education in your state and figuring out, or at least researching, a lot of this is online, figuring out the graduation requirements for high school in the state that you reside. In addition to that, if your child is thinking about going to college or if you want to leave college open, then you want to be thinking about the entrance requirements for that college or for college in general. And the great thing about these two is there's a huge amount of overlap between high school requirements for the state, for a state, and college entrance exams, in my experience. They pretty much overlap. But in addition to having college entrance requirements, you also want to look at the classes or the amount of work that was done for acceptance, student acceptance. Because sometimes the entrance requirements are different than the acceptance levels that the students actually perform. For instance, a college may require 4 classes in math, but most of the students that were admitted to that had 5, full years of math. So you want to be thinking about those kind of things, particularly if your child is interested, you know, in a particular school, is wanting to play sports there, etc. Then you want to have those things in your mind as you go along. Now, this doesn't mean particularly on math, because usually for some universities, they want 4 or 5 classes of math. So this is like algebra 1, algebra 2, geometry, trigonometry, and sometimes pre-calculus. It doesn't mean that you have to rush. I sat down to have coffee with a friend of mine, and her daughters were very interested in playing a sport for a local university. And that university wanted to see 4 or 5 math credits. So they started algebra in 8th grade so that they could do it. And their kind of attitude is, this is just something that we have to do. So they took a regular standard algebra class and just went through their math classes just to get through them, because that's just something that they had to do. There's nothing wrong with that, but it wasn't the experience, particularly with math, that I wanted for my child. So we didn't rush it. We didn't do algebra in 8th grade. I had algebra in 8th grade. It worked out fine. For some kids, especially kids that love math or do well in math and science, that works out great. Sometimes doing algebra in 8th grade is rushing the child. And I just want to tell you, there are other ways to do it. You don't have to graduate high school in 4 years. It can be 4.5. It can be 5 years. You don't have to take one math class at a time. You're allowed to double up. So if you want to take Algebra 1 your freshman year, you might take Geometry and Algebra 2 at the same time the second year. There are lots of different options here, but it is helpful to know what the requirements are and to know what the acceptance rates are as far as how many classes most of the students had in any given subject. The other thing that you want to look at, especially if your child is looking at going to a technical school, is what requirements that they have for their entrance. And any other program that you're looking at, just kind of look in the future. Might my child be interested in X, Y, and Z? For instance, my son did photography for a number of years. We knew that there was a program that allowed high schoolers to go to the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee and shoot with professional nature photographers, spend a week with them. So we were looking at the requirements of that far ahead of that program. What are they looking for? What did they need? There's actually quite a bit lengthy application process. There were a lot of different questions. So we started on that maybe a year in advance. So it's helpful to know what the passions are, what your children are motivated to do, what different programs they might be interested in, and just look ahead at what the expectations are for that application or that processing and so forth. And especially in high school, just know everything is likely to change. Sometimes the change is drastic. You go in and they're thinking they want to go this direction, and then they completely turn around and say, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to do this. But I think a lot of times, even if there's not a drastic change that they don't know, there's still this back and forth refining the path that you're going towards. And there's been a lot of refinement for us. Like, we started out with one path for a college that was in a different city completely. And now we're looking at another path. It has a lot of overlap from the other program, but it's completely different than the other program. And so, it's just expect things to change in high school. The direction that they want to go in is likely to change. And then they're also either going to change their minds or, in my experience, spring things up on you. For instance, my son came to me, I think it was in the middle of his sophomore year, and was like, I want to start dual enrollment next semester. And this, if you know anything about dual enrollment, you have to send in the application the semester before, like in the semester before. So we had to put school on the back burner to accomplish this, sending in the application and then taking the entrance exams. They call them placement exams, but they are placement exams, but they're used as entrance exams in that if you don't hit a certain score, then you can't participate in the dual enrollment program. So they are entrance exams. And we had to prepare for those. So I put our classes on the back burner and spent a month, 6 weeks preparing for the entrance exams for that. So just know it's likely to change, and they are likely to throw you a couple curveballs. And the other thing that I think is, this may be the most important thing, is to keep good records. I find it's far easier to keep the records as you go than trying to fill in the blanks after the fact. And I'm going to show you and offer you a file that has a sample transcript, a sample CV, and a record of curricula. We'll go over that. So a few books that were helpful for me in our high school journey was College Without High School, which is a little bit of a misnomer. This is by Blake Bowles. If you don't know, he's done quite a bit of research on homeschooling. And this book is basically tailoring the high school experience, like we tailor all of the homeschool experience to the child, and still doing so in a way that allows you to leave college as an open option or get into college. So, yes, this was a very helpful book. It almost has an unschooly feel to it, although I wouldn't say completely. But he goes over a lot of good ideas for getting an education and going into a program, or not a program, but getting into college, but still catering the high school experience to the child. So I think that's what he means, like without going to high school or without high school, because you're still homeschooling high school, but that is the kind of information and feel for that book. And that book helped me quite a bit. Another book that helped me, which is kind of different completely, is Homeschooling for College Credit. So a lot of times when we're thinking about homeschooling, we are looking at things like AP courses, CLEP courses, and various other things, keeping our options open, looking at what options that we have. This book is really good because it goes through a lot of those college course credit options while you're still in high school. Particularly CLEP, it talks about CLEP, CLEP classes, quite a bit. And I find these really interesting in that, if you're going to be teaching the course and they offer a CLEP test for it, there's not really a disadvantage to taking that test. If you pass it, then you have college credit for that class. And each university accepts so many college credits from it. From an incoming student. And you can look at that because they will tell you online, but they have, so many, there's lots of different college classes that you can CLEP out of. And the same with AP. And she's really good about going over the differences between AP classes and CLEP classes and what the advantages and disadvantages are both. And I think she goes in a little bit into detail about dual enrollment. Now, the thing about all three of these, particularly dual enrollment, are that they are different for every single state. And so you really have to look to see what your state, what and university, sometimes they can be very different for university. Not so much dual enrollment, that's usually like decided statewide, but what CLEP tests are accepted at the university is very specific to the university. And same with the AP, like what score you have to have and so forth. So you're going to want to look at that. But that book was really helpful on looking at, you know, courses that he could take if he wanted that would give him college credit later on. It's a very different, but also helpful from the previous book. And I have not read this book, but it's on my to be read list, and it has been highly recommended to me. So I thought I would just go ahead and add this in here in case it might be useful to anybody else. Record keeping. So I feel like this is one of the most important things, other than knowing what's coming or what your options are, in order to keep your options open. So on record keeping, you're looking, gosh, just about everything in the high school experience. And I'll go over some of that. One is the transcript, which is easy enough. After the seminar, this presentation, I'll open up the sample. I've removed the personal information from ours and go over a transcript. And the transcript, they're just looking for basically basic information. Did they have, you know, algebra one, algebra two, trigonometry, geometry, that kind of thing on their, what classes did they take? They're not looking for elaborate descriptions. And this is not really the place that you want to like show off your child's passions. They just want simple class descriptions. Did they get art? Did they have English? You know, those kind of things. You want to enter all the classes that they take. Photography was on our class list. Drone building and the part 107 was on our transcript. You don't want to leave things out, but also this is really not the place to be flurry. If you were taking some fancy English class, just write English there. They just want to simple and make sure that you checked all your boxes there. You want to keep up with the curricula used. And the reason that you want to do that, if your child is looking at going into colleges, depending on what the college is, some of them are going to want to know what you used for curricula to decide whether or not they fulfill that requirement, entrance requirement. So you want to keep a list of the curricula that you're using through the years for each of the classes. And then you want to keep up with a CV. And this is really where our students and homeschooling shines, right? And I'll go over this too. You want to keep up with any publications, any events they do, any awards that they win, any contests that they win, all of the sports that they do, any jobs that they hold, you know, all of that kind of thing goes into the CV. And we'll go over a CV at the end. And again, I find it so much easier to keep up with if we are keeping up with that as we go along, as opposed to trying to write it and trying to remember after the fact. It's just far easier to do that while you're in high school and you're in the programs. And dual enrollment, as far as record keeping, it's not too hard. You can request a transcript from the community college for that. They have official transcripts and unofficial transcripts like any other college. So that record keeping is not too hard, but any honors that they receive, dean's list, president's list, those kind of things want to be included in your record keeping. And of course, any online classes, certificates, and so forth. And like I said before, it's so much easier if you keep up with that as you go than to do it later. We took a driver's ed class through FLVS. They gave me a certificate, and I thought, I'll just save it and come back to it and put it in later. It took me forever to figure out where I saved it. It's much easier to just go ahead and put it into your record keeping than to try to go back and find the paperwork and all the information. Dual enrollment. So dual enrollment was something that we did. It was a path that my son wanted to take. It is not a path for everyone. If you guys follow Arlene and Company, she has a video on their preparation, I think for middle school or high school, but she clearly says in her planning that they have no intent at this time to do dual enrollment. So it's obviously not for every child. And there is a level of academic ability and maturity that is needed for dual enrollment. And in hindsight, had we done this again, I would have strongly suggested that we wait another semester before we started dual enrollment. For maturity was the big one. There was a lot of scaffolding that was needed in the beginning, which is not necessary. It's not a bad thing. You want to be able to scaffold. Lots of people were like, this is where we give our kids independence and our hands off and let them, you know, fly and flourish. I knew from the beginning that was not going to work for us. What I would be doing is throwing him into the pond and say, sink or swim. And that was just never an option for us. So in the beginning, I did, like, we had daily check-ins on what's coming up. I went through his syllable. I went through their pacing. We talked about every assignment. I reviewed all of his assignments. There was quite a bit of hand-holding, which is one of the reasons that I think that we needed just maybe one more step would have been useful before we transitioned into dual enrollment. There's also lots of disadvantages, but first I want to talk about the advantages. So particularly if your child is not keen on school, which was the case for us, this is an opportunity to be more efficient in the whole picture for schooling. Instead of doing, you know, world history in middle school, world history in high school, world history in college, you can do that, college, high school, world history at the same time. World history is just an example. We didn't do world history that way, but it gives you an idea of what I'm talking about. There's a lot of repetition, which is good, in school. And sometimes that repetition might be too much, depending on your child. And this gives the opportunity to make that a little more efficient, which works really well for us. The other thing that was very helpful or advantageous was that I felt like this was a really good step into being independent and also university level classes. Like, it was a very nice step. And we did online classes. In fact, this coming semester will be his first in-person class. But online classes for his dual enrollment. So it was a nice transition from me being the teacher or facilitating, helping him to facilitate his education, to someone else being responsible to someone else and interacting with that someone else. It was a very nice transition from us to, he did one class this first semester, that one class where I could do a lot of handholding because he was still at home, to, you know, he just got more and more independent as we went along. And now he's responsible, completely responsible for his stuff now. So in that way, it was really advantageous. In another way, we have a full year of free college. Like, we're not paying for his first year of college because he's done it through dual enrollment. So that also, the cost is very, is an advantage in this particular circumstances. The disadvantage, there are some disadvantages. It is a college course. So if they don't do well for some reason, that does go on their transcript indefinitely. So there's that to think about. It's on their transcript permanently. The other thing to think about is there's a certain level of maturity that I said before. They are college classes, so they're having adult discussions. They're in adult language about adult topics. So there is a certain level of maturity that is needed, and they will run into topics and discussions and so forth that they may not have discussed before. And they will read opinions from their classmates that they don't agree with. And there has to be a certain level of maturity. Also, college professors aren't homeschooling parents. And so when they give feedback, it's very specific, clear feedback. It's critical feedback. And our experience has been really positive. Most of the teachers have been really positive and encouraging, which is fabulous. But there does need to be a certain level of maturity of the child if they're going to participate in dual enrollment. And they're going to school, especially if they're going to the physical campus with other people that are, several years older, sometimes decades older than what they are. So that's also something to think about. Most of the time, that's not a problem for homeschoolers. We're used to the varied age, but it can be a disadvantage. So that is something to think about. And then I've talked about this before, but all the states are different and constantly changing, honestly. Even in the time that we enrolled, things changed. So you could do as many semesters until you graduated the year before we started. And the year that we started, they limited it to 6 semesters. This is the state of Florida. Each of the states are different. In the state of Florida, we used to still have to pay for books for any college classes that the dual enrollment student took. Now those are free. We just send up the list to the campus of bookstore and they pull them for us. All the states are different, and that's the challenging part about this. The people that are going to be helpful to you, our community college has a liaison that offers guidance, counseling, and help in navigating that system. That's really helpful. They also have a website that's full of information for dual enrollment. There were several agreements and permissions and records that they needed in order to enroll him. And so you want to be looking and talking about keeping your options open. These are one of the options or requirements that you want to be looking at. If you think your child might be interested in dual enrollment, what does that look like? So their website is very helpful. And then the state of Florida also determines, so the state determines like what a child can and can't take. And in our instance, for our state, if any dual enrollment class that the child takes has to also be covering some high school class. So they can't take some obscure class that would not be covered in high school. They wouldn't allow that. That's not offered as a dual enrollment class. So that's another thing that you have to look at. In addition, there is also how they're weighted. Some of the classes for the college class, you get an equal weight. If you do 1 semester, you get half a year's credit in high school. In some of the classes, you do 1 semester, you get a year. So it depends on what the class is, and it depends on what the state is. And so you have to look for that. And that's usually determined by the state. So the state of Florida decides what the equivalency is in a high school based on what college class you're taking. In addition to that, they also have weighted GPAs. In some areas, a class taking in dual enrollment would be 1 point higher for that grade than one taken in the high school. For instance, if you were taking US history and you made an A instead of a 4.0, you would get a 5.0 for that grade point average. Now, different colleges, different things want to see weighted and unweighted GPAs. So you have to consider that in your transcript as well. And then cost is always a consideration. In some places, dual enrollment is not free. And like I said before, in the state of Florida, at one time we had to pay for our books and supplies for the classes. And now we do not. They recently changed the law in the last couple years, last 5 years. Okay, and I talked about the age of maturity. And then also you want to look at what your goals are. Like what would a reason be to do dual enrollment? For us, efficiency was a big deal. He did not want to have to take classes in middle school again and high school and again in college. And honestly, he just really wants to be done with his general education requirements. He is frustrated that he has to jump through all these hoops to get to the classes that he really wants to take. Now, I have a different view on that. I think child or education should be well-rounded, whole person. I think part of education is making you a better person in society and that you be able to discuss basic concepts with an engineer or a mathematician or, whatever. But he's 18, so he doesn't necessarily agree with me. And even if he did, it's one thing to think that and another to have to take all the classes. So a few more things to think about. And we're at the end of the presentation part, and then I'm just going to go through the transcripts. Our letters of recommendation, this is like middle to end, and I could probably do a whole seminar. Maybe I'm not qualified for that for preparing for college, but on letters of recommendation for any scholarship program, definitely college entrance, you're going to need letters of recommendation. So you need to be thinking about that. If they are college bound, there are lots of letters of recommendation. It's too much to ask like a couple people to do all of those. So have a whole group of people that are in your mind. But even aside from college, like the photography program that I talked about earlier required 2 letters of recommendation. So we had to find 2 friends that could write the letter of recommendation for that program for him. So you just want to be thinking of that and being able to hand, especially if somebody doesn't know you really well, but ideally those letter of recommendations are going to come pe from people that do know your child pretty well. The CV is really helpful to hand them, to assist them in the writing of their letter of recommendation. And then entrance essays, those need to be well thought out. And again, lots of application processes outside of college entrance in high school are going to require some kind of essay or writing of in their application process from your child. So those are just something to think about. It's not challenging per se to write those for a child that is motivated and interested and wants that program. Like it wasn't challenging for my son to write on photography. However, it does take time, and you definitely want to go through the editing process. You want this to be an essay of their own style in their own voice. But you want it to be polished. So you definitely want to go through the editing process. And then also preparation for SAT and ACT. You definitely want to be taking those more than once, particularly if you're thinking of school. These are also important for scholarships and financial aid if you're thinking of college. So you want to be looking at those. And then the dual enrollment entrance exams or placement tests. Those also require a little bit of forethought and working through for the PERT, which is the placement test for dual enrollment in the state of Florida. We took 6 months, I think, and it was school time, sitting down each day to go over. They have three different tests, one with reading, one with writing, and one with math. And so we were going through practice books, talking about what they can expect and so forth. I think it's really helpful for a child to understand that they're going to need to take these more than once, just the expectations that they will need to take them more than once. The week that we did the PERT exams for dual enrollment, especially if your child is not used to taking tests, whew, that was a stressful week. So I think it's a little helpful if you prepare your child mentally and emotionally for what to expect. Just being familiar with the testing setup and sometimes location enables you to do better the second time. The familiarity of it allows you to do better the second time. So just let them know they're going to have to take them more than once. We did luck out. He did pass one of the dual enrollment entrance exams the first time. And like I said, I think if we had just had that last semester before we started, that would have been a much easier transition. He made it, but he did have to take two of the placement exams for dual enrollment again because he didn't get the scores he needed for entrance. So, and you know, sometimes those have to be taken three times. It just depends on the child. And that is the end of the presentation, but I do want to go through with you and look at this transcript. So this is a sample transcript. I have removed all of my son's personal information from this, but it gives you an idea of how to set it up and what to look for. In the transcript, they just want to see the classes that are taken and that you check the boxes on the requirements. So they're not looking, this isn't where they're looking for the fancy stuff or the passion or, you know, various other things. Do include all of those classes, but, you know, if you took some obscure literature about butterflies, studying butterflies through literature, for your English class in your freshman year of high school, excuse me, that's just going to go down as English. Okay. So at the top here is the student information with all the relevant stuff, name, address, birth, parents, so forth. And then the school information, of course, here you put homeschool instead of high school with address, phone number, and email address, and so forth. Some of the colleges, this is the eighth grade level classes that were taken that were high school level, want to see this in a separate area. So you will have a better idea, but even if you keep it all here, it's much easier to transfer some the information somewhere else or in a different format than not to have it and have to go get it. So, and then it goes through just each year, freshman, sophomore, junior, and then senior year. And it's pretty self-explanatory. You place the class, how many credits you're getting for the class, the final grade, and the GPA. And you determined the grade. Now, I have my own theory on that. In my opinion, in our schooling, there's no reason for the child not to receive an A in whatever we're studying. And I feel that way because that's what I expect. I expect them to put in the effort and I expect that to go over the material till they have mastered the material. So if they're not putting forth the effort, then they need to do it again. And if they are putting forth the effort, it's just taking longer, then we may take a year and a half to finish, you know, 1 year of algebra or whatever it is. But we're going to master that material. So even though we may earn one credit for something that took us a year and a half to do, I feel like that there's just no reason for them not to receive an A. Now, different people have different philosophies, and you get to choose how you want to do that. And there's often some guidelines on that. In some instances, like dual enrollment or other applications, they'll tell you how to assess the child's grades and so forth. But that is my personal philosophy. Like, we are going to master this material one way or the other. If you're not putting forth the effort, you're going to have to do it again. And if you're putting forth the effort and it's just challenging, then it may take us a little longer, but we're going to master this information. So that's my philosophy for high school grading. And then you'll see, I've just kind of plugged in classes that are typical for high school. Yours is going to look different, but I've just plugged in some different classes, like driver's ed usually happens around this time. Algebra, you know, there's the algebra one, geometry, algebra two, and so forth, that series of math classes that usually happen, same with the English and history and so forth. So I've just plugged some of these in. And for examples, you can change them as you like. And then down here gives the grading scale for each of those and how the GPA is accumulated. Also, I have taken them off here, but I also very clearly mark which classes are what. So our driver's ed class here has this FLVS right here so that we know that it came. For his dual enrollment courses, I don't think this is an actual community college, but I have his college named, and then for all the classes that he had at the college, they would be noted with that acronym here. And then SS is self-study, and he had several, like at least one for every semester for the first 3 years, self-study classes that he did on his own. And I talked a little bit about those. In the beginning, the first self-study, he had had a strong interest in building drones and was building drones. He spent so much time. He learned so much information that I was like, I'm going to count that as a class. And then later, when I could see the direction he was going in, we planned for the next class having to do with that. But I was an instructor. No one else was an instructor. He studied himself and he passed that test and those requirements. So this is a sample of a transcript. And then this is a sample of keeping track of the curricula. And it can be concise. It doesn't have to be, you know, lengthy, but you do want to have the textbooks that you're using written down. The textbooks, the curricula, different sources that you're doing, you want to have those written down and kept track of. And by his junior and senior year, he was doing mostly dual enrollment, so I don't have those listed out. There are, we did an art class together that's separate from that, but you get the idea here of keeping up with the material as you go through it. Concise, easy to read, but some of the colleges will want to know what textbooks you were using and resources you were using for each of those high school years in those classes. And you want that to be easy. So it's much easier to go ahead and write those as you go along than it is to have to go back through all of your planning books and so forth and trying to remember what books you used. And here is a copy of a sample CV. I've taken, again, all his information off. The name of the student, the address, any websites that they have. And just FYI, it's super easy to start a blog or a website for a child. WordPress has free sites, and you can upload pictures and programs and stuff for the portfolio. There's a way to make it private if you don't want it public, but it makes it really easy to link that in the CV, where they just have to press the link and they can see, you know, pictures and various things from the child, a portfolio, basically. They'll be able to see a portfolio. So we have the languages, the education. You want to enter any outsourced classes, any dual enrollment community courses and so forth for high school, any awards. So these are going to be awards for things that you're most likely your children's passions, what they enjoy most. Are they horseback riding? Are they doing 4-H? Like, what are they doing? What awards have they received? Any academic awards? I talked about that earlier. If they're doing dual enrollment, are they on the dean's list? Are they on the president's list? And then any extracurricular activities? What are they interested in? What else are they doing? Job experience. If they have a job in high school, you want to keep up with that. Also, any community service or volunteer hours. Any area that there's publications. Was there a newspaper article about something that they were participated in? Or also in publications, like we had calendars that used my son's photography that was included. His website was included in that publication. Any news articles about him were included. I'm trying to think. Any contests that he, you know, the articles about the contests that he won were included. So any kind of publications, either about them or that they have participated in, if they've written something for a magazine or letter to the editor or any kind of thing that is published about them can go in this area. Also, volunteer service, any kind of volunteer service that they've done, participated, anything that they've donated, we donated, he donated, photographs as prizes for different events. So you want all of that kind of stuff to go. And then any markets or exhibits, if your child's into art or music, you want to have all of those performances, you know, any of those kind of things written down. And then any special courses or workshops. And this is where you want to list things like, you know, he said sat in at this professor's class for this. Or one of the things that we often did was make contact and friends with local photography artists, and people are so happy to mentor and help young people. They love it. They absolutely love it. It just lights them up, most of them. And so we made contacts with these people and spent time going out and doing photography with them. All of those were listed under his CV, like those events and so forth were listed there. So you just want to put anything there that they have pursued on their own, those non-conventional sources. If you have a community member, like a friend down the road who owns a nursery or I don't know, owns horses or whatever, you can make up an event, make up a course, whatever, or name the time that they spent with that person or individual learning for and place under that category. So you can really think out of the box on some of this kind of thing. And they want to know if your child is looking at college, this is what sets them apart. This is what says, okay, this person is motivated this person is going to be an interesting person to have. They're going to be active in the university. They're going to seek out things of their interest to do. We want this person to be at our university or college. So anyway, this is a sample CV, and that is basically the seminar for today. If you guys have any questions, let me know. I'm going to stop recording and then we'll say goodbye.